TUC Radio, Time of Useful Consciousness. Bacteria and You, A Love Story, by Dr. Jack Gilbert, Argonne National Lab and University of Chicago. We have known for a while that there's an invisible world around us that is more pervasive, diverse, and interesting than we assumed. A recent article in Mother Jones described the work of Dr. Jack Gilbert. Quote, "Unless you've been living under a rock for the past couple of years, you've probably heard about the human microbiome. Research into the composition, function, and importance of the galaxy of bacteria, fungi, and viruses that, when we're healthy, live in symbiotic balance in and on us, has become one of the fastest-moving and most intriguing fields of scientific study." End quote from Mother Jones. Dr. Gilbert has impressive credentials with the Argonne National Lab. He's the group leader for microbial ecology in the biosciences division and manages the Earth Microbiome Project. And he's an associate professor in the Department of Ecology and Evolution at the University of Chicago and the associate director of the Institute for Genomic and Systems Biology. Dr. Gilbert wrote, "There are a nonillion bacteria in the world, give or take a few quadrillion. This almost incomprehensible number is greater than the number of stars in the known universe. To date, no one has ever fully characterized the biodiversity of a microbial sample. Microbes are vital to the success of life on this planet. They perform the vast majority of all metabolic processes and also control health in every living organism." End quote. In the first part of this program, Dr. Gilbert described how bacteria influence our health and how the way we live and eat, in turn, influence the microbiome. He also discussed recent research into the relationship of our microbiome with diseases such as Alzheimer's, autism, and cancer. The Alzheimer connection is a personal one for him. He, like so many others, has a family history of that disease. Here now is the conclusion of his June 2015 lecture. Dr. Gilbert begins by talking about birth and how a newborn child receives its first set of bacteria from the mother, Dr. Jack Gilbert.
A lot of the bacteria in our body come from our mother. You're actually born mostly sterile, right? And depending upon which route you come out, by a cesarean or the other way, you actually get a different microbial exposure. Babies born via cesarean section have microbial communities that look like mother's skin. Babies born via the vaginal delivery route have bacterial communities which look like their mother's vaginal microbiota, right? One of my colleagues, he loves the microbiome too. His wife had to give birth and she had to have an emergency C-section. So there's a way you can do this. You can have an implanted sponge which you then inoculate the baby with afterwards. So instead of coming out the normal route, you take this sponge after the cesarean birth and you then just inoculate manually the baby's oral cavity and skin and everything like that. And if you do that, the baby's microbiome starts to look like this. This is your starting culture. If you come from San Francisco, this is your sourdough bread. If you come from Minnesota, this is your beer culture. If you come from France, I don't know, this is your yeast for your wine. This is what kicks you up on the route to becoming who you are. And these microbes stay with you for about a year, right? The microbes your mother gives to you via her skin, via her oral contact, and via her vaginal delivery, they all stay with you for a long while. They feature very heavily in your microbial self in your early stages of life. But it's not the only story. Your mother's even, her milk has its own microbiome, right? The body actually starts to actively recruit bacteria via the lymph system, shepherded by your immune system. Your immune system releases immunoglobulins, which grab hold of bacteria from mucosal surfaces all around the body and takes them in via the lymph system and deposits them in the breast tissue. And then those bacteria are actively given to the child through the breast milk. So the breast milk contains a prebiotic, lots of lovely fats and sugars and protein, and it also contains a probiotic, actively delivered to the child and evolutionarily designed to be effective in the degradation or the consumption of breast milk, plus the training of the baby's immune system. But even that's not the only story. It's a great story focused on the Amish and the Hutterites, and it's slight sideline, but bear with me, I'll tell you the story. This is the love story, maybe. I don't know. I like the love story idea. It's great. The Amish and the Hutterites are two Eastern European religious orders that came over and set up home in America, right? And we have about 35,000 Amish living in northern Indiana, and we have another population of around 50,000 Hutterites living in South Dakota, or North Dakota, a Dakota. And what's interesting about these guys is that they both live very similar lives. They both have eschewed technology up to a certain point. They like the plow, but beyond then it's not cool. They don't like electricity. Their homes are immaculately clean. I'm a little OCD maybe, but these guys are super OCD. Their homes are like dusted constantly. They don't use vacuums, they just use brushes and pans, but the homes are spotless. It's remarkable. They don't use really any chemicals. They live a reasonably chemical-free life, sure. Now, the Amish have one significant difference to the Hutterites, actually two. One of them is important. The Amish live on family farms. If you've ever been to an Amish farm, you'll see that the kids really don't have games. My kids don't like going to the farm because they're made to feel guilty for playing on their iPads while the rest of the kids are doing work. All the kids work, from birth pretty much. You know, you're sitting there milking on your mother while she's milking the cow. You're in the barn constantly. You are interacting with the environment around you from birth, right? You are constantly exposed to a rich and diverse microbial flora. The Hutterites, only boys over the age of 14 are allowed on the farm. And they're all shipped in there. So the carriage comes along and it picks up each working male from each household, and they go to a centralized farm facility where they then do all the work. Women and children aren't allowed on the farm. I don't know why. Don't ask me that. Somebody asks me that every time and I have no idea. But it's an interesting point. The Amish have no asthma or allergy in their population. Virtually none, less than 0.001% of their population shows any of these illnesses. The Hutterites have elevated levels of asthma and allergies over the US average. Right? The US average is around 7 or 8% for asthma, for example. Hutterites have around 13 to 14%. They need double. And there's something to be said for that. Number one, take your kids down to an Amish farm and rub their faces in the dirt. That's what I started doing. Number two, maybe we should be selling the dirt here. Maybe it's really cool. We could go and all like sell it on, you know, Weibo or on Amazon and make a lot of money. Or number three, something about their lifestyle is actually leading to the development of a healthy immune system. What's interesting is if you take children who are growing up on a traditional American farm, right? They don't have this. They have reduced levels of asthma and allergies over the US average, but not significantly. It's maybe 5 to 6%, so about 1 or 2%, 3% reduced below the national average. Right? Even if it's an organic farm versus a non-organic farm, no significant difference in the allergy and asthma rate in the population growing up on that farm. It's not that. It's not the chemical exposure. What is it? Magic? I don't know. That's why we have to study it. So we're actually actively trying to understand what's going on here. We think it's actually their lifestyle. We think it's actually the number of physical interactions they have with the microbial world on a regular basis. Most farms, the children aren't actively forced to go out and do the work morning, noon, and night. They are actually brought up in a traditional American way, right? They can watch TV, they can go and play video games with their friends. Not so on this farm. We don't fully understand it yet, but we're starting to get there. Now, I said I'd gross you out a little bit. I probably will, right? The clothes you're wearing are no barrier to your microbial cells. If you think that the clothes you're wearing are actually stopping you from microbially interacting with the chairs or with any other surface you touch, such as, you know when you want to open the door handle to the washroom and you pull down your sleeve and you're like that? Don't. It doesn't make any difference. Your microbes on your skin and the microbes on the door handle are interacting quite happily through that material. This is like loose fishnet stockings to the bacteria. And when you sat down when you came in, you release this puff of microbial cells. In fact, I can go into any student lecture I give, and if I swab these seats after the lecture, I could tell whether a woman or a man had been sitting on that on the chair. I could tell the gender specificity of each person sitting on that chair. Right? You can draw your own conclusions as to why. But your microbial cells are not contained within you. They are all around you. And this environment we've created for ourselves, this built environment, is just perpetuating that relationship. Your microbial ecosystem is being released into this room and then feeding back upon you. Now, if we were doing this, 5,000 years ago, we probably wouldn't be indoors. Or if we were indoors, it would be in a big open space. And we'd probably be, sitting around a campfire or, doing something else. I don't know what, I can't even think when 5,000 years ago was. But it probably wasn't in an air-conditioned building in the middle of Chicago. So there's something dynamic that's happened to our lives. And one of those things that's happened is we've moved indoors. Now, 90% of our lives in the Western world are spent indoors. If you live in Chicago, it's usually about 99% because it's either too hot or too bloody cold to go outside. So you end up spending a lot of time in this manufactured ecosystem, okay, with the air conditioning on or the heating on, and you rarely open the windows. And you then just get this constant reaffirmation of your microbiome. And if you take a child, remember, they're born sterile, they acquire the microbes from their mother, but then they acquire the microbes from the environment in which they're placed. The Amish children get them from all the animals they interact with. The Hutterite children get them from their mother and the other children playing in the house. The normal children just get them from whatever's going on inside that space. And they may not get much interaction outside of that. And that may be a fundamental reason why most children grow up, 7 to 8% of them grow up with some kind of autoimmune disorder. And we need to be able to understand what is triggering that.
You're listening to a talk by Dr. Jack Gilbert on Bacteria and You, a Love Story. Gilbert is possibly one of the best credentialed and impassioned scientists on the topic of microbes. Teaching at the Argonne National Lab and the University of Chicago, he currently manages the Earth Microbiome Project. In addition, he works with a human microbiome project and research projects on microbes in the home and in hospitals. In this talk, he focuses mainly on humans and their homes. Each person's collection of microorganisms is different, and in fact, the collection of bacteria on your right hand is different from the collection on your left hand. In 2012, Dr. Gilbert posted the results of the Home Microbiome Project. After taking note of the immense microbial variety on an Amish farm, he wanted to find out what the microbial ecosystems in our urban homes and man-made environments are, and if there might be a link to the increasing health problems and autoimmune disorders. Dr. Gilbert.
In the home microbiome study, we really fundamentally started to look at the microbial interaction we have with the space. We wanted to map which bacteria are moving between us and the space. So if I take a bedroom floor sample from family 2, any microbial sample that I took off this bedroom floor could be identified as coming from that family. Family 1, similar. Most of the bedroom floor samples and kitchen floor samples could be identified to that family. Kitchen light switches, I took a swab of that kitchen light switch, I couldn't really identify that family from that sample. This is important. This is forensics. I can utilize each one of your unique microbial signatures to identify you, to track you in a space. This is Jared's house, and Jared has dogs. And dogs are awesome. Dogs increase the complexity of the microbial sharing. It looks like a spaghetti ball, right? The dogs are actually actively interacting with each member of the household and with pretty much every surface and spreading microbes around in a consistent way. People that own dogs are more likely to share more microbes than people that don't own dogs. And also, children that grow up with dogs are less likely to develop asthma and allergies. Might be a correlation there. No causation of yet, but there's a correlation. We know that this happens because we can take bacteria from a dog, lactobacillus in this case, give it to a mouse with asthma, and the mouse will not suffer from asthmatic attacks, or it has a significantly reduced likelihood of having an asthmatic attack. So the lactobacillus from the dog seems to interact with the mouse's immune system and feeds back on it to prevent the mouse from having an allergic reaction to whatever stimulus was occurring. And this is highly important, right? This is why dogs are awesome. And we can use this information in either nefarious or healthy ways. One of the nefarious ways is to develop a national database of the microbiome so I can track every single person in this room and find out exactly what you've been doing, who you've been interacting with, and what you ate for lunch. That'd be fun. We could do that. Or we could use it to actually identify a personal medical reason why you might not be responding to your particular drug regimen. And so this is very important. Understanding how you interact with a space isn't just about trying to map the way microbes move between each other. It can be used for medical purposes. We want to be able to identify you individually. We also want to be able to identify how you're picking up pathogens in an environment. So, I want to put microbes in your medical records, right? This is tricky. I come from a country where it's very easy to do that because we have a National Health Service. America. All right. The National Health Service isn't bad. It's just not as good as yours. But that's not a point to hate it. I can go to any doctor in England, and I can get the medical records for myself for my entire life, from birth through to the point I'm at now. I can't do that in this country. You guys don't share medical records the way you probably should do. I want to put microbes in your medical records, but I want them to be available to you. I want to make sure that you can track your microbiome daily and that you can use that information to interact with your medical service providers so that you can tell them how your treatment should go, right? To be more involved in your understanding of your health system, right? One way to do that is to put these devices that can monitor your health back into your home. So we've been actively developing a microbial toilet sensor so that every morning, when you're doing what you do in the morning, you know, checking your emails. Yeah, I know. All right, checking your emails in the morning and you've done what you need to do. Your microbial sensor will tell you on your microbial sensor app, patented. I'm joking. I should do, though. God, I'm bad at this business thing. It will tell me exactly what I have in my gut today, and potentially I could develop an algorithm that tells me exactly what I should have for breakfast. So maybe I should have blueberries for breakfast. Well, my app could tell me because it wants to rebalance my microbiome and keep it healthy. And so having that information in the palm of your hand, being able to tell you exactly how you should day-to-day manage your body, may be an incredibly effective way at helping us to prevent the onset of major conditions which we all fear. It wasn't until really the 1920s, 1930s that we really started to give a crap about cancer. Okay? That was because before that, we were all too busy dying of tuberculosis. When we got rid of using extremely efficacious methods of public works, of vaccination, of antibiotics in the late 40s, when we got rid of all the nasty pathogens that were killing us, we started noticing that other things were killing us. Now we've started to notice that maybe our modern-day lifestyle is actually starting to have an impact upon our health too. And so we need to be able to monitor the way we interact with the modern-day environment so that we can effectively control that interaction to lead us to a more health-benefiting society. So 2 years ago now, we started up a public crowdsource funding campaign after being told by the National Institutes of Health that our project wasn't particularly effective and we should go back and come up with some hypotheses. Any scientists in the room will understand the pain of that. We decided, nope, we're going to put an American flag on it and sell it to the public so you guys can fund it. And we now have a British one as well with the British flag on it. And so basically we asked people to have their microbiome sequenced and to pay a small donation to have it done. And then all that data becomes public, so that any scientist anywhere in the world in any community can use that information to actually understand how the microbial signatures they see in their study, how that really compares to an entire population of people. We actually have a little over 10,000 people now in the combined study, and we're hoping to get, you know, hundreds of thousands over the time. And this is non-for-profit, but it enables you to contribute to science. This is important. It helps us as a community to really understand what it is about the microbes that live inside you as a unique person, what it is about those microbes that could be affecting your health, could be affecting your disease treatment. And we really need to understand that. We've done this with a family. So we looked at a mother, a father, their daughter and their son, and their son has crippling allergies. That we use this information to figure out why that son's microbiome was different to the microbiome of the rest of the family. They're obviously living together. The son and the daughter picked up their microbiome from their mother. They were both vaginally delivered and breastfed. We know that that microbial transfer happened, but something went wrong with the son's immune condition. So he suffered from severe allergies. And so we found that the son was missing about four different bacterial taxa that the rest of the family had, and contained two bacterial taxa which the rest of the family didn't have. Everything else was pretty much unimportant. So some of these organisms were highly important. And so what we're trying to do is utilize this information to develop probiotics that could potentially be used to treat that kid's condition, giving him the right bacteria back and potentially reducing the abundance of those other organisms. Tailored, personalized treatment for an individual. Because most of the probiotics you find out there aren't very effective at treating anything. Right. Just as a joke, Peter Littlewood is the director at Argonne. He's one of my bosses. And Eric Isaacs is the director, he's the provost at University of Chicago. He's my other boss. And so I, for a joke, at the first version of this lecture I did back in December, but I did their microbiomes, and I sequenced them, and I wanted to find out how they compared to the US average and what made them different, and if I could say anything about their health. They're not in the room today, so I can be even more cheeky. 82% of people with a microbiome like Peter Littlewood's exercise rarely to occasionally. How much you exercise, what physical activity you have, has an effect upon the bacteria that live inside you. Changes your diet, for one. It also changes your nutrient requirements. And that actually actively feeds back upon the microbial community inside your gut. So we can see that. 45% of people with a microbiome like Eric's exercise regularly. It's not particularly high level. But it turns out that this guy actually does a lot of cycling up and down the path. And Peter doesn't. Peter's actually British as well. So I have to shake my head in shame. And these are lower numbers, but 37% of people with a microbiome like Peter's take probiotics regularly. Turns out Peter didn't take probiotics, so I was quite glad about that low number. 42% of people with a microbiome like Eric's regularly take vitamins. He does take vitamins. I don't know, you know, it's only a percentage, but it's interesting. They both slept well, and the amount you sleep, as I suggested with obesity, can potentially affect the microbiome and vice versa. And both of these guys had a very similar sleep-based microbiome. Right? 53% of a microbiome people with a microbiome like Peter's eat very few vegetables, whereas 61% of people with a microbiome like Eric's eat quite a lot of plants and vegetables a week. So we see, you know, this potential. This guy actually does eat a lot more meat, and Eric's mostly vegetarian. So we actually see a differentiation in the microbiome. This is pretty much what I can say about people's microbiome in this system. Now, I'm interested in putting this information, just to finish up now, into something which I can use. This is a map of the city of Chicago and obviously Indiana. And what we're looking at here are 10,000 Chicago households over 2 weekdays in 2008. This is time. This is 9 o'clock in the morning, 10 o'clock in the morning. And these are their activities. So the blue dots are people at work. The yellow dots are people at school. The red dots are people going shopping. Etc. And you can see Chicago is not maybe the most exciting place, because you'd think that, like, when it got into the evening, like about 4 o'clock, 5 o'clock in the afternoon, you'd start to see some people doing other things. Mostly they're going on to recreational activities, but those are all the kids. There's really no nightlife. We didn't see much in the way of, like, people actually doing anything much in the week. I mean, that's good, they're all working. But this information is from people, nothing to do with their microbiome. But I want to be able to track their microbiome in the same way that I can track their personal activity. Because if I can do that, maybe I can design better ways to build cities. Maybe I can create new initiatives to improve urban design. Maybe I can lead this to better architectural patterns. So we've been working with a group, Chicago and Argonne, called the Array of Things. And these are boxes which are going up on lights, fittings, and intersections around Chicago, which are monitoring information about the environment. Everything from temperature and carbon dioxide to air density, air quality, the microbial community, and even tweets. And what we're using this information for is to try and understand how urban environments, how they're designed, how that affects the environment in which we all live, right? And how we can use this information to potentially design better environments, better urban systems that could have potentially improved health benefits. So on the baseline of that, if there shouldn't be any sound with this, but hopefully it won't give you sound. We want to create a microbiome initiative that really leads us to building better environmental systems. And that means that understanding how our microbial cells, how our microbial ecosystems are shaped by this urban environment. We now live in an urban world. We are an increasingly urban species. Most of the people, most of the growth in populations around the world is urban growth. And yet we don't really understand how cities work, especially not cities with indoor environments, with controlled ventilation. We think that the best way is just to remove all microbial life. But maybe it's not. Maybe we need to design cities better so that the microbial world inside our rooms is as diverse as an Amish farm, that can lead children growing up in those spaces to have an increased microbial diversity and potentially improved health. I think only by doing this can we actually have an effect. I can't make everyone live on an Amish farm. I can't make everyone return to a hunter-gatherer lifestyle, but potentially I can bring the Amish farm and the hunter-gatherer lifestyle into the urban environment and create an ecosystem whereby they can survive and thrive without being plagued by some of these modern conditions which we've developed. And I'll leave it there. Thank you very much.
That was the conclusion of a one-hour talk by Dr. Jack Gilbert. He's the group leader for microbial ecology in the Biosciences Division at the Argonne National Lab and Associate Professor in the Department of Ecology and Evolution at the University of Chicago. On the Argonne National Lab website, Gilbert's work is described as exploring microbial community structure and function at the global scale. His research spans floodplains, forests, and grasslands, to buildings and humans, end quote. For the purpose of this talk, Gilbert focused on the microbial world inside you and me, and why this may be a love story. He mentioned in passing the crowdsourced research project that allows the public to get involved. It's appropriately called the American Gut Project, www.americangut.org, and participation is still open. American Gut is a project built on open source, open access principles. Many thanks to Dale Lehman from WZRD Radio. He recorded Gilbert's talk at the International House in Chicago on June 5, 2015. You can hear this program again for free on TUC Radio's website, www.tucradio.org. Look at the newest programs or the podcast page. While you're there, you can subscribe to weekly free podcasts. Downloads are free, and we appreciate any size donation to keep TUC Radio on the air. Our email address is tuc@tucradio.org. My name is Maria Gelerden. Thank you for listening. Give us a call.